I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Variety, they say, is the spice of life, so why not indulge in a variety of spices? A new book will get you in the mood for all that, The Spice and Herb Bible. It's the third edition, and Ian Hemphill joins me now to talk about the hefty tome that he's written with Kate Hemphill, who designed the recipes. The Australian native joins me from here in Vancouver today, and we'll discuss this book and more. The benefits of herbs and spices will be something to discuss, as the right ones make a terrific substitute to salt and sugar, which are two that aren't so good for us. Ian Hemphill is a native of Sydney, Australia. He heads the family business, Herbie's Spices, which has the largest selection of herbs and spices for sale and export in the Southern Hemisphere. The website for more is at herbies.com.au or herbiespicesusa.com. The book is published by Robert Rose. Please welcome to the Plant on the Land program, Ian Hemphill. Mr. Hemphill, good morning.
Good morning, Jay. Very nice to talk to you.
The same, the same. I guess the first time you said you've been in Canada, is that right?
Yes, haven't been to Canada before, and it's been one of the places that I wanted to visit for a long time, and of course, first stop Vancouver, which is a beautiful city, and love the variety of food you have available here, too.
Yeah, are we known, or do we have a certain taste of ourselves from the food that you've tasted? I mean, did you taste certain spices, herbs, that are, say, unique to this part of the world?
Not necessarily unique, but what I'm noticing is a great deal of fusion, and probably a little bit similar to Australia. We see plenty of Indian, Thai, Vietnamese. You've got Italian, you've got Japanese. Like Australia, probably the immigration that you've had here has been a key driver of that. So it's lovely to just see that great variety of foods that are available here.
And I guess Indian food, that's big everywhere, isn't it?
Pretty big. Not so much in the United States. Seems to be a little bit slower to take off there, but Indian food is extremely popular in Australia and of course in the UK as well, and it is so incredibly tasty, and I think that's one of the things that gets people hooked on it.
And in terms of the spices that one uses to, say, make their own, their curry, are those inexpensive, do you find?
Yeah, look, as a rule, the key spices that people would be using, like cumin, coriander seeds, turmeric, cloves, cardamom, a little bit more expensive than the others. Then you'll even find a little bit of paprika being used, and of course chilies used in Indian cooking, fenugreek seeds. Most of those are quite readily available, and they're not horribly expensive, and especially when you consider the small amount that is used to flavour a dish. You might have 1 or 2 pounds of food, and you're only using a few teaspoons and most a tablespoon to flavour all of that, say, meat or fish, then they're really a pretty economic proposition to make good food taste great.
Yeah, and if one wanted to outfit their kitchen or their pantry with say, the basics, the staples that one must need for in terms of herbs and spices, what might they be? And I guess at the end of the day, they don't cost a whole lot, do they?
Not really, no. And I think that, a lot of people now have access to fresh herbs. A lot of people are growing them in their garden. And fresh herbs are very important to have for dishes that are either not being cooked for very long, or you're wanting to add the fresh herbs towards the end of cooking so that you maintain that lovely fresh herb flavour profile. When it comes to the dried herbs, it's always good to have in the pantry ones like oregano, sage, thyme, marjoram, rosemary. They're the real essentials. Basil, dried basil can be useful, but nothing really beats fresh basil, and I tend to prefer that in most applications. And of course, the herbs are all the leafy parts of the plants that we use in cooking, where spices can come from any other part of the plant, the buds, the bark, the roots, berries, seeds, etc. And if I was going to stock a pantry with the essential spices, I would probably start off with things like black pepper, which you will find in, of course, in many recipes as well as being used in the pepper mill. Then we have cumin seeds, and people can buy those either whole or ground. Coriander seed, another very important one, because coriander seed blends very effectively with nearly all other spices. Turmeric is very important. Turmeric, when people smell it on its own, they might think, oh, why would I use that? It's got a very earthy note, but when it's combined with the other spices, it gives a beautiful flavour to both Indian and North African dishes. Works very well. Various varieties of chilies are important to have. I'm particularly fond of some of those dark Mexican chilies like the pasilla, ancho, mulatto, and of course the lovely chipotle, which is a smoked jalapeno. Very good one to have in the kitchen as well. And then we'd go for cloves, which we don't use very much of, some cardamom, and with those basics, you can do quite a variety of meals, whether you're talking Indian, North African, or even whether you're just flavouring something as basic as a hamburger. You can use a lot of those spices to do that.
And you mentioned the difference between herbs and spices, which I think is important, because if you put a gun to my head, I probably would not have known what the difference was.
Right.
Well, when I picked up the book, the first thing that I looked up was the bay leaf. And I'll tell you why, because when we make sauces or something, they say put a bay leaf in. And I've done that, and I've done it without the bay leaf, and I can't really taste the difference with or without it. I mean, what is its importance? You can't eat it too either, right? You have to take it out before you eat it.
Oh, you would definitely take it out before you eat it, yeah. Look, it depends a lot on the other flavours that are in the dish. If it's a dish where you've got a lot of fairly full flavours, the bay leaf may not be quite obvious, but what it does is it adds a nice little bit of a savoury flavour to something. It balances well with other herbs that you have in there, and it might depend even on the quality of the bay leaf that you put in. Was it necessarily a fresh one, or were they dried bay leaves?
I see, yeah.
Because that can have a big difference too. See, a lot of people forget that herbs and spices are agricultural commodities, and because they're agricultural commodities, where they're grown, how they're harvested, the post-harvest handling and cleaning and storage, there are many factors which will influence the quality of the herb or spice that you get. So if you get something that's maybe a bit old, it might be well past its best before date, then you're not going to get much of a result from it. And good way to tell if your dried herbs are still good to use, I always say to people, put a little bit in the palm of your hand, rub it with your thumb until you've broken it up a bit. The warmth of the palm of your hand plus breaking it should release the aroma. And if after you've done that you hardly get any fragrance, you can bet that that spice is well past its best before date. The herbs and spices never go off, but they do deteriorate over time as the volatile oils in them tend to oxidise and deteriorate. And I say to people, smell your herbs and spices every time you use them, because that way you will recognise them, you'll become more comfortable using them in your everyday cooking, but you'll also notice if they are as bright and as fresh as they should be.
And heating them up, because I've heard people do that, where they roast the herbs again, or the spices again. I mean, people shouldn't do that, right?
It really depends on the recipe.
I see.
Will get some recipes, particularly Indian, which will call for dry roasting the spice. And what that does is it changes the flavour. A lot of people incorrectly say, oh, roast the spices to bring out the flavour.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's not exactly correct, because roasting changes the flavour, a little bit the way a piece of toast will taste different to a piece of bread. And some Indian recipes, you know, beef curries, that type of thing, will call for roasted spices. But if you were making a Moroccan lamb shank tagine with paprika and cardamom and cloves and cumin, there's no way you would roast the spices for that, because you'd want the brighter notes in those spices, and you wouldn't want to affect them by roasting. Depends a fair bit on the recipe, but you definitely don't roast spices just as a matter of course.
Now, when you go to the supermarket, yeah, I'm sure it's the same as in Australia, you see these in the spice rack, you'll see pre-made, or pre-mixed, I should say, curry powder. And I guess we really should make our own masala. We should make our own mixes, shouldn't we? I mean, in the book, you have quite a few in there.
Definitely, and that's what I wanted to do, and I think making them does two things. First of all, once you start to blend a few spices together, you get a real feel for the magic that happens when these different spice profiles come together and create an entirely new flavour. The other thing is, if you look at the ingredient listings on the packet of the majority of spice blends in supermarkets, you will find that there are lots and lots of other ingredients besides herbs and spices. And a lot of these are artificial ingredients. There are things like isonate and guanylate, which is a strong form of monosodium glutamate, but they don't have to call it MSG. You'll get free flow agents like silicon dioxide, all those things which you don't need. A spice blend only needs to be made out of natural ingredients.
Substitutes for sugar and salt, I mean, people think that most people think we ought to reduce our intake of both sugar and salt. Do you find there are some substitutes that will fit in well?
Oh, most definitely. The fundamental principle is that you're not using a herb or spice that is a direct substitute for the salt or sugar, but by using the spice, the need for the flavour-enhancing attributes of salt and sugar become less necessary. I make porridge every morning, and I put some cinnamon in that porridge. By doing that, sugar isn't necessary. When I will be grilling a piece of fish or chicken, I will rub some spice on that, often without any salt at all. And again, the use of salt doesn't seem necessary because you're getting a beautiful, satisfying flavour for what the spices do. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to, in this edition, increase the focus on blends and how to get the most out of them and how to make your own.
Well, what's the pink salt called? Because I've seen that in supermarkets a lot lately.
Yeah, that's an interesting. There are a few different pink salts. There's a pink salt from Australia, which has been made by actually extracting it from high salinity groundwater. And by doing that, they've returned some high salinity areas back to agriculture. There's been quite a good environmental result for making that salt. The other one you see most commonly in Indian spice shops is actually a mined salt, and it's often called pink salt or black salt. And that's because when it's mined, it's in these sort of large, dark, black, almost purplish looking chunks, and when it's ground up to a powder, it goes a pinkish colour. And this salt has quite an unusual flavour. Most salts get their flavours from the impurities that are still in them, and that's what gives them different flavours. Personally, I don't use a lot of different salts in cooking. I'll sometimes use a flaky salt as a finishing one if I want to sprinkle it on food, and I'll use a basic cooking salt actually in recipes, but generally try to use less because, as you say, we are being told that we've been consuming a bit too much of it.
Yeah.
It's always good to cut that back. And the other thing, too, is I find too, you can cut back quite a bit on a lot of fats if you are using spices. Somehow the need for a lot of fats in food doesn't seem as necessary.
Really?
Yeah.
Where are you on pepper mills and salt mills? I mean, we're seeing a lot of those in recent years. It seems awfully fashionable, but is it necessary, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Look, a pepper mill's a great thing to have on the table because freshly ground black pepper, ground over a steak or a salad, you know, so many different things. You get that lovely black pepper flavour profile. Not a lot of heat. Pepper's not nearly as hot as things like chilli. So having a pepper mill on the table is a great thing. Salt mill, yeah, look, it's nice. I suppose it's one way of not having a salt cellar where the little holes get all clogged up during humid conditions. So it's good from that point of view. And it can be a nice way to just add a little bit of salt to your meal. But it's more the pepper mill that I'm keen on.
Yeah.
I like to use that. Of course, people buy salt mills. They should always make sure that they have either a stainless steel or ceramic mechanism. Because if it's an ordinary metal mechanism, naturally the salt will make it rust and it won't last for very long.
So do you grow everything that Herbie Spices sells?
Oh, no. A lot of the herbs we buy from local growers in Australia, and we then either some of the growers process them and dehydrate them, others we actually dehydrate ourselves. And then the majority of spices come from many different countries around the world. So we get spices that come from India, ones that come from Turkey, North Africa, quite a lot come from Southeast Asia. So a variety of places. We essentially search for the best quality that we can find at any given point in time. And for that reason, we import from all these different countries, which is great. And of course, the wonderful thing too is that we, over the years, have developed a great relationship with a lot of the family-owned farms that produce these spices.
Do you get product from here in Canada?
The only item that we have from Canada is mustard seed, yellow mustard seeds. Sometimes we're getting them from Australia. They are grown in Australia. But very often we'll also get them from Canada. But that's the only spice that we've been sourcing from Canada.
Yeah. How big is the farm?
We have a 25-acre property, but we only grow a few things on that. We grow some cinnamon trees. We actually harvest, you talked about bay leaves earlier.
Yeah.
If you ever see an Indian recipe that calls for a bay leaf, don't add a European bay leaf.
Really?
Yeah, the Indian bay leaf is actually the leaf of the cinnamon tree. And we have a large grove of cinnamon trees at home, and we harvest those leaves and dry them, and we sell them as Indian bay leaves, because if you're making a curry that calls for a bay leaf, that's the one you should use. Quite a different flavour to the European bay leaf.
The book is also a great travel guide, because it tells you where all these spices and herbs are from, and it must have been fun researching that part of it and learning about each one, was it?
Oh, look, it was wonderful. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these people who are growing them, they're small farmers. It's not a broadacre monoculture industry like tea and coffee and rices and grains. In the spice industry, you have lots of small farms. They're growing their spices and then generally trading them with local traders who will grade them and then on-sell them. And to visit those farms, to meet the families, could be 3-4 generations of people in that family that have been farming, we have always found their hospitality and generosity wonderful. And that's one of the things that I wanted to share in the book, because I wanted people, in demystifying the world of spices, I wanted people to get a feeling for what goes on behind the scenes and the amount of care that so many people put into these amazing flavours.
Yeah, the beginning of the book also shows us, I guess, the history of it all, and it provides us a view of just how important the spice trade was to our economies. I know it's your living now, and it's still important, though, isn't it, in terms of economics and the sort?
Yes, very important. It is a small industry compared to the others that I mentioned, but it is, you could call it relatively high value with low volume. So to the communities that are producing these, they're getting a very good benefit without having to, you might say, process hundreds of tons of product. And they're very good crops for families to be growing. And it is so important economically to the Indian economy that the Indian government actually has a spices board, which is involved in helping farmers understand the most the best agronomics for their crops, the best ways of drying them, and they have field offices all around India, and these people go out and they talk to the farmers and they help them. So it is an extremely important industry in India, but in a number of other countries as well. It is a very important contributor to the economy, but no one really puts the amount of effort into it as the Indians do. They're the ones who are really really on top of it in a very big way.
Ian, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. I hope you've enjoyed your time in Canada. All the best for the book.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to talk to you.
The websites for more, HerbiesSpicesUSA.com or Herbies.com.au. The book is called The Spice and Herb Bible, 3rd edition. It's from Robert Rose. Its author, Ian Hemphill, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunham.